I'd like to buy one ticket to see Imaginary, please.
Well, I should tell you that this movie is not really good. We're supposed to tell anyone buying a ticket that this movie is not very good.
Yes, I know. That's exactly why I want to go see it. This is an actual exchange of our seeing this movie. I just want to point this out. This literally happened to us while seeing this movie.
the cashier, I guess, when he was using our Regal Unlimited thing to scan, I told him what movie we wanted to see, and he's like, "Well, I'm supposed to tell you.
I'm supposed to warn you.
Management is making me warn you that this movie is not good."
And I don't think he said management
or someone. He said, He said, "They're making me tell you." That's what he said. "They're making me tell you."
He said, "I just want you to know. They're telling me to tell people it is not that good."
And I'm like, "Yeah, we're used to seeing crap."
And it's said, "Well, it's free, and we know we're seeing it on purpose for that reason." And we weren't disappointed.
Now it's garbage.
Another movie night.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're Just Another Movie Night. I am Scott.
I'm Joe.
Are you Joe or are you Chauncey?
Oh, I could be Chauncey.
I was going to say that I was SB? SB, Scotty Bear.
You're Scotty Bear?
Chauncey Bear.
Okay. All right. I like it.
You know what? We're doing something special. Talking trash.
Talking trash.
Talking trash indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, the much debated, and the often forgotten flicks on the internet, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we believe you can't really review a movie without knowing what the worst movie is. And that's why we're feasting our eyeballs on this shit for you. We're sacrificing our souls for you guys.
Well, this we should say that this is actually coming out a little bit later, and that this movie has been seen by many of our
respected people. We already said what we're doing, but the whole point in this month, we're doing movies that are newly released this year. We knew that they weren't going to be before and afters because we knew they were going to be a little something special. So this whole month has been special movies in the theater and our shit talking. Because sometimes before and after, we don't want to spoil. We just want to give our basic reviews. And on Talking Trash, we're like, no, fuck that. Some of these movies deserve to be spoiled because they need to be fully debated about. Now, on Instagram, at Entertainment Paradise said that this was one of the worst movies he's seen already.
Mm-hmm. I've heard many people say
I saw a lot of people, but I particularly told him, wow, well, I guess I don't need to ask you what the worst movie you've ever seen is. This is already one. And he says, get it. Go get it. So I'm here to do that. This the Imaginary, a.k.a. Chauncey Bear, is directed by Jeff Wadlow, the director of such movies as Kick-Ass 2, the Fantasy Island movie, and Truth or Dare. So I would already say that he has a Blumhouse pedigree of not doing so good.
Yeah.
Don't like in Fantasy Island. I did not hate it.
Okay, I didn't hate it either. That's what I was going to say. And I didn't hate Truth or Dare, even though it wasn't great.
I didn't like Truth or Dare.
I didn't hate it, though. I mean, we've seen some freaking trash.
Well, that's the problem. That's the whole point of what we do on the show, is we love to talk about the things that some people automatically say it's the worst movie I've ever seen. But at the end of the day, there are so many worse things out there. And that's why we love to do this show. We love to completely decipher that. Now, as people who watch really, really bad films on purpose, imagine Fantasy Island didn't look so bad to me. I thought there was things to be commendable about it. I thought there was a unique perspective on a old property, mm-hmm. turning that into a horror movie. it had a lot of potential. It was interesting to me. I did not hate it. I know that's a, some people would be like, oh my God, how? When you see things that we've seen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's, I did not hate that movie at all.
We've stared into the void. And something stared back. And it's touched our souls. But tonight, we are talking about Imaginary. So, yes, we saw this in the theater. And we have, like, every month we've had plans. We have themes. So we're kind of holding this off for our whole month full of these movies. And Imaginary is really interesting. And I think the reason I wanted to do this, I think one of the movies I wanted to do for this month in particular that we ended up not doing was Night Swim. Because I think this falls in that same kind of genre of movies that have a lot of flaws,
yeah,
and a lot of problems, but they also really open up the door to talking about what makes a bad film, what makes a bad horror film, and I think what makes a bad movie in general. And I find those conversations very interesting. What is the lack of, like, the loss of potential and the complete wrong direction to go? And I think that both Night Swim and Imaginary have this same problem to me.
They do. They have a lot of the same kind of cliches.
Oh, yes.
However, there were some elements of Night Swim that I found to be pretty, you know, on the creepier side, that kind of elevated that one over this one.
Well, I'll say that they both had something that was good. I thought both had a, okay, we have a premise.
Mm-hmm.
We can explore this. And I think both of these movies have that, where this is fun to explore. And this would have been great if this was taking more time and caring.
Mm-hmm.
I think both films had that, but both films go in the complete wrong directions. Now, we were talking about this. We haven't discussed this movie. We haven't discussed this movie at all until now, but we said we were going to write down a bunch of stuff. Now, really quickly, in a discussion of what makes a bad movie, I would say that screenwriters have this problem, the cliches of horror movies.
Yes.
So I wrote basically script writing 101 for horror people. Now, I think that the problem with Blumhouse recently is that this is all that's happening. Is that they're getting this checklist and they're following it step by step, right? Now, this is what I wrote, and then you tell me what you wrote, if you wrote something for this. This
I'm has pretty nothing sure we wrote do. The same cliches, because I also wrote cliches.
Yeah, this cliches. Has nothing to do with the movie, but mm-hmm. this, I think, has to do with every movie Blumhouse has been putting out recently. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
It goes like this. Every horror movie goes like this. Newly married couple or getting serious starts off the film. Stepkids.
Yep.
One is an asshole who hates the stepmother.
I have
or
that.
Or father.
Yes.
And two, the dysfunctional kid who the horror in the movie latches onto. Usually the second kid. Or it's one of these. Sometimes it's only one kid.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost, demon, monster, or confusing mix of the three that center on a plot device.
Mm-hmm.
So, originally when we were I was talking about doing Night Swim, I said, well, the movie's about a pool. How do you do it? I want to write a movie about a killer toaster and how a demon is in the toaster. So what I said was how easy it is. You can take anything and follow this checklist and write any movie off of it. So in my fake screenplay, the toaster is the plot device. The demon is attached to it. The demon toast. Okay. Now the secondary parent doesn't believe the other parent.
Okay, well, I had the same sort of, but mine is dad has no clue what's going on.
Yeah, that parent is always oblivious or doesn't believe.
Yes.
Then the father, or not so much, wife leaves town.
Halfway through the movie, I have that as well.
Leaving the single parent to be with the kids for the first time.
Yes.
When everything goes wrong. Random character who accidentally gets involved is killed to show the thing's power.
Yep.
Usually it's a neighbor, a friend, a best friend, a babysitter, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Old wise person, a.k.a. screenwriter's mouthpiece, drops exposition to explain the plot to the audience because they think you're dumb.
Yep, I have that.
Yeah. Step parent fights to save the kid at the risk of bodily harm, winning kid's love.
I don't have that one, but I do have that there's always one kid that latches on, that's latching on to the step-parent or newcomer. And there's one kid that hates the stepmother.
Yeah, I said that one. Yeah. But now we're at the part in the movie where those kids start latching on, and they now the parent is showing that they're a love. So then the kid that hates that person is now like, oh, I'm a jerk and I have to change my ways because this person's actually willing to bodily harm, you know, for us.
Yeah.
So then fake out ending, either for sequel bait or actual ending where asshole kid helps connecting bonds.
Yep.
All right. And then the monster is seen or hinted at being alive right before or during the credits. And that's exactly all you have to do to write one of these movies.
Okay, well, you forgot that the cliche neighbor is the obvious bad guy. Because it's usually how the person who knows everything about what's going on and...
That's different. So what that comes in is the writer's mouthpiece. That kind of connects to that because the actual bad guy is always going to be the ghost, monster, or problem. And sometimes that ghost, monster, or problem is actually somebody who needs to be, hey, please help me, because the neighbor's the killer.
Mm-hmm.
That's different, you know? And what's nonsense about ghost movies is that that ghost never tells everybody, hey, I'm dead, right, and I need help. I'm under the floorboard.
Right, they just try to scare the shit out of everybody first.
Instead of actually telling you, I'm going to scare you and possess things and make terrible things happen until you don't believe me.
Yep.
It pisses me off so bad in every movie. But yeah, these are the things that all you need to have to write a script.
Yep.
And Imaginary follows this to the T. So did Night Swim.
They really do. Yeah. Both of them do, yeah.
And I believe Night Swim was Blumhouse, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Two in already in this year. Two. Now, I think that the problem with Blumhouse following this whole idea is they're becoming like, you know, the Marvel trend. Horror has been very successful for a lot of companies, Blumhouse in particular, but they're starting to make very bad choices. They bought a property and didn't know what to do with it. That's exactly what Marvel is having problems with. They don't know what to do next. They have so many characters. They bought a Fox, got all the characters back. They don't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with Blumhouse with Exorcist. They paid way too much money with it. It bombed. They don't know what to do with it. They scrapped it. So they basically took a giant hit. That's also happening with like Star Wars. There's a lot of problems out there, and that's a big thing. And they're also flooding the market. So now Blumhouse is flooding the market, thinking, well, if we make a movie, and here's the budget for Imaginary, $13 million.
Wow.
Yeah, that kind of shocks me. They're making movies and they think that's low budget. Now, you probably could have made a way cheaper movie, spent most on, you know, commercials.
Yeah.
Advertising. But $13 million and hoping you probably are going to make that money back.
Yeah.
So regardless, Blumhouse has a thing, but the problem is the more they make, the more they're spending, the more they're wasting. And if they flood the market to the point where nobody wants to go see the movie because they're so sick and tired of the genre, that's what we're going to have. Because I think this happened in the 90s, where horror started getting so put out, no one wanted to fund it anymore, and it kind of died. And it had to come back. There was a resurgence because of Scream. It's a weird thing, but Marvel's doing the same thing where they're flooding the market. There's so many superhero movies.
I know.
Nobody cares. There's fatigue.
It's like oversaturation.
I feel like that's happening with horror.
Well, now, the last one we liked of Blumhouse was Megan. That was the one we really liked.
That's kind of like a cheeky, we kind of like it. It's kind of right there in that hitting the sweet spot in that corny and fun and stupid.
I really liked it. I gave it a seven. I really liked it.
Yeah. Some people hate it. Now, I particularly think that was like a fun little film.
Yeah. Another one we love, actually, is Happy Death Day.
Yeah, I enjoy that. Another one that people hate. I don't know why. I enjoy both of those. One, a third one. But I actually really enjoy that. It's a franchise that I thought was evolving each movie. They didn't make enough money.
Yeah, but you're right, though. I mean, they have been, like, I mean, the last couple of years have been just total crap. Like, Five Nights at Freddy's was total dog shit.
It made them money. Exorcist Believer
was dog shit. The Black Phone was okay, but it wasn't great. Totally Killer was okay.
Yeah.
Lots of tropes. But, I mean, they're just not winning, Blumhouse.
No, Blumhouse is definitely... I think A24 is capturing what people really want from horror. I think they're doing really interesting things and giving it to interesting people. Yeah. So, you know, with things like Talk to Me and stuff like that are really connecting with people for a reason. Blumhouse, I don't think they're connecting. I think they're following a cliche timeline. Like, how do you make, fast food horror movies?
Mm-hmm. Like, how many can you pump out, too? Because it's just one after the next.
Yeah.
So do you want to just talk about a little bit about what the movie is about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I wanted to get that out of the way because the movie follows that so much that it's easy to talk about this movie because you've seen this movie before. I think that's the thing that's shocking about this movie the most is just how dull it is. Like, it has, a decent premise that so desperately wants to be Chucky. You know, it wants to be Chucky, it wants to be Freddy, it wants to be these things in this one package, but it doesn't really know how to get there.
It seems very confused by its own premise. Like, it's not sure on how to become what it's trying to become. They're very lost. You could tell. They were just lost.
And you could tell one of these movies happen is that the writer or whoever it is, the director, they have an idea. And that idea usually is a part of the movie that's a big scene or scare. They're like, oh, this would be a cool scare. Usually these movies are given to short film directors. I think Lights Out was one recently that was done where he made a online film and then they were like, oh, we like it. Give him a movie. He had a harder time stretching that idea into a full length movie to me. But and I think that's a big problem. But a lot of these people just come up with a cool shot and try to write a movie around it. And this movie definitely is that problem.
That is 100% true, especially since Blumhouse is so famous for putting the most infamous scene in their movie in their goddamn trailer.
Ruining
it. It's like, okay, so you're trying to get butts in the seats by showing this on screen, but when you get to the actual movie and you're sitting there and your butt is in the seat, you're like, okay, this is all there is. This was in the friggin' trailer.
Yeah.
I was like, what the?
That's a problem.
I already saw this.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, you know, go F yourself because that's crap. You can't, you can't just leave us with this one thing, you know?
It's so odd. It really is an odd thing to do in your movie to ruin it in your trailers. But when you see a movie like this, you don't have much else but to show it. You know what I mean? So I get that. Now, here is the deal with this movie. We're like I said before, with the cliche, you know, the bullet points of how to write these scripts, we're following a woman who, of course, starts off the movie with a scare, because usually you have to do that. And usually it's a character who is experiencing the thing earlier, before the new couple comes in. This movie's not. This movie starts off with their main character right off the bat. Following a creature is chasing her, and it's very confusing as to who and what is happening in the scene.
It feels like it has a human head. It looked like a human head, but it was like a spider body.
It's like a spider person who also it looks like a man, and I was confused as to who this character was, who had no teeth and like white eyes. I thought it was like a boyfriend, and I didn't know really what was happening. But she's being chased by a giant spider. Now, she wakes up out of a dream. Another cliche. You're going to start this movie. It's going to be some kind of traumatic past that she has. And then she has to deal with it as you find out slowly what that dream was and how it connects to her tragic past that, of course, she doesn't remember. Because when you write a script, you're kind of, well, if she remembers... Well, then that's going to open up a whole thing. Why would she go back? Why would she do these things? But why did she forget? We don't know, and we're not going to talk about it. We're just going to write it in there because we don't really have the answers. That's this movie. So she wakes up, she's with her boyfriend. Now, let's talk about these two characters.
Okay. You feeling the vibe between them?
No.
Me either.
No, which they could be married or they're not. I don't really know. No, they're married.
They're married in the movie. Yes, they are married.
Okay. I didn't get that at all. I also don't get that he's the age that has these two kids.
Okay. Well, let's just say he's in his mid-40s. Let's go there.
And he has a 15-year-old daughter. He's supposed to be mid-40s?
Yes, that's possible. Yes,
he doesn't feel... He feels like a hipster at a coffee bar.
Well, he doesn't end up being a musician.
He is, of course, a musician. We don't know the specific instrument or music that he plays, but he also doesn't seem to really work with a woman who's a children's cartoonist.
So she's a writer of children's books.
And an artist.
Yeah.
She writes children's, you know, like small children's books. With the art in them. And I don't understand the chemistry here. I honestly thought this actor that they chose to play the husband was just too friendly. And his face throughout this movie just felt so like... He felt like in a different film. He was... His whole character is, I'm happy.
Yeah, he did feel like he was in a different film. And his story... Do you want to talk about him a little bit? Because he has these two girls living with him permanently. They're his daughters. One is maybe, what is she, 7 or 8? And the other one is 15. Now, At first I was like, okay. When I saw the trailer, I was like, well, this is weird. Because they showed the little girl. They showed Alice in the trailer. But I don't recall them ever showing another, like, sister or sibling in the trailer. So when I saw the other daughter, I was like, oh, this is weird. She's obviously going to take a back seat in this movie. And she does. But still, like, the whole point is, like, they decided to go with this weird plot of this man having an emotionally, mentally disturbed wife. And she was in an institution. And they never explain why. Do they?
No. And in fact, they really don't explain what has occurred between her and the daughter. It's only that the suggestion has been fire. Some kind of fire incident has occurred where she has burned her daughter.
So, yeah, she hurt her, the little girl, Alice. She hurt her. Alice has a scar on her arm. We get that. So that's like pretty much the only kind of anything that we really get on this woman. We don't know what happened. Did she just snap? But she's in some kind of a mental health facility.
A good one, too, because they allow you phones.
Yes.
Yeah.
They allow you phones. And so she's texting with the teenage daughter and I guess telling her everything about their new life and their new house.
Apparently, we only find this out at one moment. It's very odd, and it's just out of nowhere. It is. And it doesn't mean anything.
I mean, not to get too far ahead, but anyway, it was just really weird that they decided to go with something like that. It was odd, because they didn't really embellish on it too much. They didn't really embellish at all, to be honest. But we just know that Jessica and her new husband, or, you know, whatever, they're now living in her childhood home.
Well, in the movie, they open up where they talk about how they should go. And that the painters are coming, but they're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And if they move in now, the house won't be ready. But because she has these nightmares, and that's her happy place, which I don't get into that, he says we should go early. Because he's the best. This mm-hmm. husband is just so friendly. He's always laughing, always smiling.
Very
always
accommodating.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah, very accommodating.
I feel the romance. No,
not
at
all.
I
didn't feel any connection between the two of them at all.
Could have been brother and sister or best friends. I couldn't tell what was happening in this. Like, I know what was supposed to be happening. None of it felt real or genuine. Yeah. But fine, whatever. They decide to go early. They go to her childhood home. I have about 50 million questions about almost everything in this movie. Because her childhood home has been abandoned question mark up for sale a question mark
okay
left
no.
to her question so, mark
the situation is that her mother passed away from cancer
question
when she
mark?
Was very young and she was living with her father in that house and I guess he just...
Who was?
Her father was...
Who was living with her?
He was living with her in the house.
Who is Jessica? This is our main character?
Yes, our main character is Jessica.
For how long?
Okay, not long.
No.
Because we learn that the father is... Okay, an incident happened when Jessica was 5 years old. So the father has been living without anyone in the house since Jessica was 5, because that incident that happened, she was taken out of the home by social services and brought to her grandmother, where she would grow up and live at her grandmother's house, not with her father, because apparently she sustained an injury and they thought there was some sort of abuse going on in the house. So they took her away from her father. Now, I'm guessing later on her father developed some sort of dementia and could not take care of himself, because he's now in assisted living and the house is hers.
None of this makes any sense.
I'm just trying to explain it the best I can.
Okay.
Because none of it does make any sense.
Especially when you see things and get told things.
Yes. So an incident happened when she was 5. Now, at least 30 years have passed. She's grown up now. She's grown woman.
Yeah, she's a grown woman.
So he's been living in that house all this time by himself. Her mother passed when she was a little girl. So what happened to the father where he is no longer able to take care of himself in that house in that 30-year time span?
Yeah, yes. Why was he left? Because I have so many questions. I guess we'll wait to talk about it when something happens in the film. Because they go into the house, it is perfect. In fact, the house is exactly the way she remembers it.
Mm-hmm. With still the writing on the wall from when her mom, you know, used to put the little chalk on there and see how she's growing, you know, on the walls. When your kids are growing up, you put the little chalk and you measure them.
Yep, it's still in the hallway.
Still in the hallway.
Her old childhood room. By the way, place is huge.
It's a very big home.
Very yes. big house. Questions what everybody does for a living to afford things, especially since he was a single parent who had his kid removed from the house. Makes me wonder how he kept paying for this house.
How did he maintain the house? That's the question.
Yeah, there's so many questions to that. The house looks ancient, like no one's lived in it for a very long time.
But it's on a very sunny, beautiful block in some suburban town.
Perfect town.
Yeah.
No shithole. Everybody is nice. The town looks like something out of a Leave It to Beaver episode.
Yeah, the grass is mowed. Everything's nice.
Everything's perfect. Yeah, everything's perfect. And you remember those painters I mentioned? Yeah, they're never going to show up at the house, and we're never going to mention them again. Yeah, and in fact,
I already forgot about the goddamn painters.
You would think that, you know what, horror movie? Good idea. Set up the painters or workers that are going to come into the house to use them as scares. Or maybe set up the, you know, show of the monster, which is one of these clips. Nope, we're never going to mention it. In fact, we're never going to clean this house out of the old stuff from the house.
No.
There is a basement that when it gets the first reveal of the basement, it has everything in a horror movie you can imagine. It is a dark dungeon with no light and a secret passageway. Nobody's ever checked this. They're in downstairs in this basement. There are boxes and boxes marked the year in which the girl was there. Oh, everything from when she was 5.
Mm-hmm, because that's the last time she was there. Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And also, those shadows, great for showing the monster, ? I'm going to say question mark, because, yeah, the monster in this film does not know what shape it is. Nobody knows what this thing is, and they just keep changing their mind.
Because they don't know what to do.
They don't know.
That's what we're saying. Like, they just didn't know what to do. Like, how to execute this monster. They just didn't know what to do. They put it in bear form, or what do they not put in bear form? It's
all over the place. There's literally 6 forms of this creature. I don't understand it at all. Yes, but they move in and they, of course, pick their rooms. She makes her old kid room with the paintings on the wall. She makes it her art room. And she wanted to give it to the little girl who has problems because she's very scared. She has like a doll with like no head. This is like a little doll body. And she's very fragile, this little girl. And she's scared of everything. And she's covering up her arm. Yeah, she does have a weird doll with no head. It disappears.
It looked like a blanket that she was carrying.
Is it a blanket? I thought it had arms.
No, those were her arms embracing the blanket. She was
I know that. I thought it had little stubby little arm things, you know?
I don't think so.
I know what her arms are. You think those giant arms were a doll?
Maybe. You never know. I used to have big dolls when I was a kid. Freaky. Why do you think I'm such a, like, weirdo?
I actually thought it was like a Cabbage Patch doll without a head. I didn't know what it was. She kept holding on to it. It was like a silk blue blankie looking thing. But it doesn't matter because it goes away really quickly. She's very nervous and she's always covering up the scar on her arm. Very, very funny. Is the husband in this movie has a type. You know? He likes things exactly. He said he's a really, really good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's such a good guy that he he is dating a woman who has night terrors.
No, okay, they're married. They're married.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. They got married. Whatever. They never seemed like it once. I don't even think they, you know, whatever. Yeah, the one daughter, the 15-year-old, hates the stepmother.
That's just a trope.
And she's all goth out, you know, like she's looking grunge rock.
Of course.
And dad's looking Kurt Cobain. And he is now married. Now, remember, he was previously married to another psychotic woman.
Yes.
That hurt her daughter, his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Now he got remarried to a woman who suffers from night terrors and doesn't remember her past, who has the exact same looking scar on her arm as his daughter. He finds none of this interesting whatsoever. He doesn't find anything creepy connection-wise. He doesn't find anything like, maybe I have a type of psychotic women. Maybe you think that he would say, maybe it's me.
Well, men like psycho women, don't they?
Jeez.
I mean, you married one.
Yeah, and by the way,
I just went right over that one.
I'm not going to entertain it.
No, it's okay. You're surrounded by psychotic women. Annabelle's looking at you.
That's true. So, to really hammer in this thing about this guy with this woman. Now, not only does she have night terrors, where she's being chased by a giant spider in hallways, she also does children's books of a giant spider chasing a millipede woman that is her in insect form. So now, if this isn't a cry for help, I don't know what is. She's an award-winning children's author, by the way.
Yeah, what's the name of her children's book?
Millie the Millipede.
Millie the Millipede. It's cute.
She's being chased by a spider creature in these art things.
Yeah, but then the husband doesn't think anything of
nothing
it.
Nothing of it.
He's just like, oh, you write these children's books that happen to have a spider and stuff in it, and you're dreaming about spiders? Maybe you should draw a butterfly and do something else. He doesn't even say that.
Yes. Nothing about that. No worry about that. He's so not worried about it that he can leave town.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah he leaves town to go for, what is he? He's some kind of musician, but he goes
they
on tour.
They never talk about it, but he goes on tour at one point in this movie. Yeah. So, we're kind of slowly getting established of the house. And the young daughter, of course, because movie, she finds the imaginary friend. But it's not really an imaginary friend because it's a teddy bear that she discovers that just so randomly shows up. I think that there's a game where the woman, the main character in this movie, she's such an asshole that she goes and says she's going to play hide and go seek with the little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Dad is never home, never around. She goes and play hide. She instead of actually playing hide and go seek, she takes a phone call from work and leaves to go out the front door. She just leaves this little girl in a new house alone. So naturally, she goes walking around the house scared, and she hears voices leading her down to the basement, where there is a doorway into a room that's like a secret room. And she finds it all. She's able to get in there, and that's when she finds her teddy bear, who's staring at her.
You know, I have something to say. This bear is not even a cute bear.
I actually love this bear.
It's not. I don't think it's a cute bear, and it's also not an off-putting bear. It's just a bear.
I think that's what's fun about it.
Like, they should have made a decision. I don't know. I don't like it.
My favorite thing is when you pick a cute thing to go deadly. That's Chauncey the bear. The bear is named Chauncey. Now, the bear Chauncey is my favorite bit of the film. Anything that has to do with Chauncey itself is interesting to me. And I think that this is why I brought up Chucky, how bad it wants to be Chucky, because they actually do one-liners at some points in this movie that are very Chucky-like, friends to the end, you know, this is the end, friend. They basically do that ending twice in this film where they say something like that, and they have both kids have one. Mm-hmm. That's the problem, though, is Chauncey's so kind of interesting, and it should be the killer doll or a possessed thing, and they could have worked on this a little bit. That would have been a better film. It reminded me very much of another movie we've already done on Talking Trash, which is Dolls, where the little girl has a teddy bear and they throw it into the forest, and she has a vision of the bear turning into an actual life-size teddy bear who rips into shreds. And I thought this movie seen that movie, because they do that in this movie, and I think that stuff like that would have been much cooler. Mm-hmm. If they would have taken it a little more seriously.
They tried.
This movie should have been Demonic Toys. And that's where I think the premise could have been great, with this little teddy bear going like ravenous. Like,
yeah.
Or speaking. Or doing things like that. It's so close to being there. They do come up with some really unique moments with the bear. And there's some really interesting things around the bear. But the movie just doesn't know what to do. And it constantly just moves on and does dumber things.
I mean, nothing happens. It's like those annoying long shots where you're just waiting for the doll to move. You know, it's like when I watched The Boy for the first time or whatever, I'm waiting for that doll to move. It never does. And, you know, and then you're just sitting there forever, just waiting on the same thing forever. Like, I wanted that doll to get up, that teddy bear, to get up and do something, because I just needed to see it. You know, like, there was a whole hour of this movie where nothing happened. Just nothing. And it was very boring.
Interesting.
I mean, I didn't get any, like, feeling of dread or anything. It was like, okay, this is just a cliche. This daughter's an asshole. The little daughter, you know, we just went through all the cliches, but nothing really kind of made me like, okay, this could be creepy. I didn't have any of those moments at all. And I'm just waiting for the stupid bear to turn its head and look and, or even say something. Never did.
I'm the opposite. I think I can name three moments where I was like, this is clever. And this sets up real, it's not crafted well enough, but it's almost there to being a really cool moment. I definitely think the scene in the trailer with the bear is good.
And the teenage kid?
Yeah, we're going to get to that. I wanted to wait, but yeah, there's a couple. There's also the teenager, we're going to get to that in a moment. He opens up a whole thing. I could talk about that kid forever. But things around him that just all of a sudden get established are far, far more interesting than the rest of the film. And I like those little bits, and I think those are really neat. But yeah, let's get to that, because we got to talk about Chauncey a little bit. Chauncey is the whole idea of this imaginary friend that is this teddy bear is fucking weird and fascinating. The little girl talks to it, and it talks back in her voice. We don't see the bear talk. We just think that she's talking to herself, like she's possessed,
mm-hmm.
which is strike number one of bad decisions.
Yep.
Having the little girl who I would say strike number one on the whole film is the cast is not well crafted enough. everybody seems just a little bit off, or a little underacting, or just not right in the way that the emotion deserves to have moments away, you know, like in any way. And the little girl in particular, there, it seems a little forced. I would say that the older sister as well, always making the same face of like mildly shocked or questioning.
Mm-hmm.
She always does a face like that, and it gets annoying really quickly. But having her also voice Chauncey brings away the creepiness.
Yeah, it does.
Chauncey needs his own voice.
Maybe we shouldn't play together anymore, Chauncey. Maybe we shouldn't be friends. No, 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 no.
Or at least the demon, whatever it is.
I'm trying to say is like, I'm waiting for him to do something, you know, like to be himself. Like, I want to see him do something that's extraordinary. Nope.
Yeah. Yeah. But Chauncey sends her on a grocery list. He gives her a scavenger hunt of things to hunt. And this should open up to the one of those scary things. It's not. It's kind of laughable in a weird way. But she goes around the house and starts collecting strange things like a paintbrush, a whole bunch of weird things. Something happy, something that hurts, something that scares you, something that burns, something mean. And all these things. And she starts doing these things, and that's where the movie starts getting questionable, to the point where, you know, odd things are slowly happening. We're seeing her talk to the doll. The doll seems to stare at people. Sometimes the doll's eyebrows get a little mad. Like, has a mad face. Sometimes he looks shocked.
He does, like, a little scowl.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the neighbor, because this woman, the stepmother, is the worst, she actually just goes and leaves at one point. Because we're finding out slowly that there's, like, people in the neighborhood. So we have two neighbors. Now, it's very confusing as to where those neighbors live, because they both come from the same house.
Yeah, it seems that way.
They're not related at all. They're not actually supposed to be in the same house, but they both come from that one hedge.
Yeah, it's weird. It's from like the same direction, but the old lady lives across the street.
So yeah, there's an old woman who has been staring at the house, and it turns out that it is the lead character's old babysitter. That apparently she watched her when she used to be a child, under five, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a lot to say, this woman. She is the writer's.
Every culture has a name for it. We call them imaginary friends. Just because you stop believing in them doesn't mean they're gone. And they're angry that you left.
She is the whole exposition dumps. Anything that needs to happen is going to come from either her or a therapist later on.
It's so extra. So can we just talk about this lady? Okay, first of all, she is being played by the woman who was Carrie's gym teacher in the movie Carrie from the 70s. Her name is Betty Buckley, and she's playing Gloria. And she seems to know everything about Jessica. Now, okay, Jessica was 5 years old, like 30 years ago. How long did she babysit for since she was born? Since she was born, okay? So 5 years. And then Jessica was sent away to live with her grandmother. This lady has made it her life's work to remember everything about this person, okay? You have not had children of your own. You have not moved on. You have not done anything else in life. She walks up to Jessica and just tells her, I was your babysitter. I know you. I remember everything about you. And I'm just like, really?
Yeah.
Really?
She's like, you had an imaginary friend when you were a child, and you made me almost believe that imaginary friend was real. And she's like, I see your daughter also has an imaginary friend. And named Chauncey. Chauncey. Yes. That's right. And she's like, and basically this, she gets away from her, but she's like, your father talked about you all the time. He used to sit there and read your books on the porch. all the time. Which leads me to question a lot about the father, because it doesn't make much sense. Anyways, this woman, I'm going to just talk about her a little bit. She owns a huge house, just like the main characters do, lives in the same block, has never been married, has never had kids. Questionable if she has a job. She says she self-published on mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
She has dedicated her life, we find out, to researching imaginary friends.
Yeah.
How does she pay for the house? She's waited this many years?
She also said that nobody really buys into her bullshit books.
Yeah.
So she's not merely really making any money off of those books, but you literally have devoted your whole entire life based on 30 years ago, something that happened 30 years ago.
Yes.
I can't. It didn't even happen to her.
It's odd. Now let's talk about the other character. The other neighbor is a boy next door who's flirting with the older daughter. And the older daughter is, you know, wants to hang out with him. Well, the stepmother, the main character of the movie, decides to just leave these two kids and leave this asshole stepdaughter with the crazy stepdaughter and go see her father in an institution.
Yep.
And now we find out that her father is the man from the opening dream that I didn't know who he was. And he is a very gigantic dude, this actor. I mean, he's huge. Also, bad choice in actors to choose to play this part, because he seems comical.
Yeah, he does. It's a little over the top.
He is acting on another, his character just seems like on a whole nother planet from the movie. And apparently, he has no idea where he is, and he's very violent. And we find out that the daughter and him have had no contact since she was like 5 years old when the grandmother took her away. Okay.
All right.
That's interesting.
Yeah. It is.
All right. But she left the other kid. So naturally, the one kid, as the little girl is going around on Chauncey's shopping list around the house doing crazy shit, she invites the boy over, who naturally is a drug addict, who wants to do drugs with her, is a complete piece of shit. And I just got to point out, he goes to Chauncey and she goes and gets the bugs. And then looks at Chauncey, and he's like, she's like, Chauncey doesn't like you, or whatever. And he's like, I don't like him either. And then he makes a face, and then the bear makes eyebrows at him.
You're right, I do recall this.
And then he goes, ugh. Yeah. And again, later on, he looks up at the stairs and sees Chauncey on the stairs staring at him.
Yeah.
And he's creeped out. Now, this kid is an idiot on another level, but I gotta talk about every scene with this kid, because it just wouldn't stop making me laugh out loud in the theater. He decides that he wants to drink alcohol because the girl won't do drugs with him while she's trying to watch Warm Bodies. He goes and grabs her parents' alcohol and says, let's drink all this. And of course he grabs it with one hand, like three bottles, and just drops them. So she's like, oh my God, we got to clean this up. Go get towels upstairs in the bathroom. He's never been in this house.
So, yeah, this is another one of those stupid scenes. It's like, she's telling him to go get towels upstairs. Like, oh, okay, you're sitting on the couch.
Yeah. She's, like, picking up the glass, and she tells him to go upstairs. Now, I gotta talk about every scene upstairs. He goes in the hallway, and he sees a pull cord for a toy.
Mm-hmm.
And he follows it. Like, he steps on it, and it gets pulled, and it goes down the hall toward a room that's, like, light coming out of it. So now we see that it's the little girl's room, and there's a music box that has never been talked about in the movie up to this point. It just establishes right here. There's a really fun music box that's playing this one theme, and it shoots lights all over the walls, and one of the lights is a bear, and it travels around the room. And it plays the song, and he's like staring around the room, and he's getting very creeped out. And he keeps seeing like a sheet in the shape of a bear all over the room. And he gets to the point where he finally touches the box to shut it up. And he hears what sounds like the little girl say, "Don't touch my stuff." So he's really creeped out. So he goes, "Okay, screw it." And he goes to the bathroom. Now, he goes to the bathroom to take, to get towels, apparently. But instead, he leaves the door open, lifts the toilet seat up from the front with his hand, takes a piss all over the toilet onto the floor, right? Because suddenly the bear shows up again under a sheet on top of the towels. And he's completely creeped out, so he pisses all over the floor and his shoes. And now the doll, the sheet and the teddy bear are missing. So what does he do? Now, I guess you should play multiple choice here. Does he A, clean up the piss? B, grab the towels to bring them downstairs? Or C, do none of this and just put his wet pee hands on top of the towels and then walk out into the hallway? Because he does C. He doesn't grab the towels for the alcohol that he was supposed to get. He doesn't clean up the piss that he just poured all over the floor. And he also doesn't like shutting doors when he goes to pee either. He doesn't grab the towels. He goes out in the hallway, and again, the pull cord is there. So naturally, he keeps getting creeped out, and the pull cord keeps moving, and he keeps following it like a mousetrap until it's down the hallway. And again, the pull cord is going to the teddy bear under the sheet. And when he puts his foot on the pull cord, as it's pulling, it pulls the whole sheet and teddy bear toward him to the point where it jumps into a giant bear monster and it just jumps at him.
This is the scene we were addressing before. It's in the trailer.
I think it's cool. I think that the light box is neat. I think the teddy bear under the sheet is neat. I think this is the concept that the people had, that all of the scene is all they had, and then they try to structure a movie around it because they never tried to explain this, the music box, what the song is.
No.
They never explain any of that.
No.
They don't even explain Chauncey properly in this movie. So that's very strange. But I think that this stuff is clever and at least something special.
Yeah, but like I said, it's clever. But they don't do it again, ever.
No.
It's like...
Again, I'm with you on this. I understand. I'm just talking about this is the thing that was interesting.
Yeah.
I think these things are interesting enough. There's a concept there. There's something there that they had that could have been gold, but they failed.
Yeah.
Because from here on, nothing is particularly done well with Chauncey. Like, we didn't talk about how they hid under the sheets and the Chauncey's the bear. You could see the ears moving around the room.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was like, that's cool. That's a good setup. You know, that's a fun little thing to do. Chauncey, a cute teddy bear, being the villain is neat. I kind of love that concept. And we saw Benny is Afraid, or is it just called Benny? The one with the killer Muppet?
Oh, yeah, I think it's just Benny.
Yeah, I loved it. That was like a very independent movie, and it's actually quite fun, and I love Benny, the doll that's a killer doll that's obsessed with the guy that owns it.
Wait, was it Benny? I don't know.
Yeah, it's Benny. I know it's definitely Benny. But anyways, check that out. That's actually kind of a fun little interesting indie film about a killer doll again. That's cute.
Oh, Benny loves you.
Benny loves you. Mm-hmm. Says it a lot. Yeah, but that from here on, that's nothing else because the kid just runs down the stairs scared and he says, "I'm tripping. I think I'm tripping." And the he runs into the stepmother's home and she gets the neighbor, his mother, and comes over and he says he's offering my daughter Molly, and she's like, no, he's just, that's my allergy medicine.
Yeah, he's like a little shit.
He's just
like
an idiot.
Yeah,
well, it doesn't matter, he's basically out of the movie from here on. He just stays in his house and stares through a window at one point, and that's it. That's all that happens with this character. That's it.
But can I just also say something that really pisses me off about him? Is that things start happening in the film where he could make a pretty good witness.
Yes.
And they don't ever talk to him again.
Yeah. Nobody even acts like he ever saw anything. They don't even, nobody character saw that he saw anything. No one was paying attention to him.
Well, because the daughter was downstairs. She only pops upstairs and says, "Hey, what are you doing?" Because he was making noise up there.
Yeah.
But she didn't see any of the things that he saw. He didn't even tell her what he saw. He was just a basket case.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like,
so you couldn't even think of him.
Right.
Like, but then again, they don't think of anybody. Along. Well, the stepdaughter, the youngest one, goes to hurt herself. The stepmother goes upstairs and thinks she's talking to the bed where she thinks that she's laying, but it's not her. She's actually out in the backyard. So she's talking to Chauncey, who's under the sheets moving.
Yeah, that was creepy.
It was a cool idea. And when she looks outside, she sees that the stepdaughter, and I couldn't stop laughing because she ripped off a part of a broken fence in their property. The whole property is amazing, except for the shit fence in the backyard.
Yeah.
That's just like rotten wood. She's able to rip off a whole plywood plank that has a nail sticking out of it. And she's told by Chauncey that she has to slam her hand into it.
Yes, because she has to
have something that hurts.
Yeah, do something that hurts. Now, that's on her scavenger hunt list. So she has like this list that she has to, you know, get things that are scary, things that are creepy, like bugs and all sorts of stuff, and gather them for whatever reason.
Well, what's fascinating is the nail is a flower to her.
Uh-huh.
They show that it's a flower. They don't talk about this enough, about how he's making people see things.
Right.
That's not really established enough. It's just, she keeps saying that if I do things for Chauncey, like he's always hungry, which also doesn't really play into anything. Chauncey's always hungry. If I do things for Chauncey, he'll make things happen for me. One of those things is that the actual mother of the kids has broken out of the psych ward and come for the kids. And Chauncey made her look like she was in a dress at a tea party.
Yes, but can we talk about the... Okay, you have to talk about the fact that Jessica, who is our main character, looks out the window and sees that Alice is about to slam her hand into a nail. And she runs outside and kicks the board away before she can do it. At that point, she calls up her friend, who is a therapist.
It hasn't happened. I know, I said it out of order. I just wanted to throw the stepmother out there because that had happened earlier. It's like the first incident.
Are you talking about the biological mother?
The biological mother. I'm sorry, I keep saying the stepmother. This biological mother actually broke out of the psych ward because she's been texting with the older daughter. And they called the cops, and they have to arrest her again and bring her back. How did they find her? How did she find this place? Oh, I've been texting her. I thought she was getting better.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, can we just talk about how over the top that scene is?
Well, oh, it's crazy.
Where Jessica is literally watching and videotaping Alice talking to a person. And we're thinking that she's just having some conversation with her imaginary friend, Chauncey. But we actually see knees in the shot behind the door.
Yeah.
So someone's sitting there. And then out of the blue, this woman just charges at Jessica and runs her over.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what?
Yeah. And Chauncey dresses her up, apparently, because she's saying to her, like, oh, you look so beautiful in your dress.
Yeah, okay.
And it's like never really talked about like what the powers are and how they work. They never really discussed.
It makes zero sense because that would imply that the mother can see Chauncey too. Now, this is the part of the movie where I was like, okay, this little girl is obviously mentally ill like her mother. Because
at least the movie seems to want to tell you that.
Yes, and that is like what I was thinking. I was like, okay, this is not an imaginary friend type thing. This little girl is mentally ill, her mother is mentally ill, and that's what they're trying to give us right now.
What if it's actually the husband is mentally ill and he's driving them all crazy?
Well, he's not even in a damn movie.
I know, I was just kidding. I'm just saying there's something wrong with this guy. I don't trust him at all.
I mean, you know who that guy is, by the way? He's Jesus in Walking Dead. Remember? He wears the beanie.
And oh my god, him? That's where I knew him from. Yeah. I knew he looked like a stoner or like a hippie.
That's where you know him from. But anyway, so
I forgot about that character.
Yeah, so then they call the police, and then Jessica gets on the phone with the husband and says, you know what, I don't know if I can do this. I need you back here.
Well, at that point the husband was still there. He went and he left after that. After a psychotic woman broke out of a psych ward, he leaves after this moment.
Was it really?
Yes. He leaves. He knows that his new wife is talking about how things are making her feel weird in the house. And then he had to go and do his job. He was going on a tour. I don't even know what he's amazing? Doing.
This is just such a freaking trope with horror movies. And this is so many horror movies that we've seen. I mean, just dozens and dozens. Where there's shit going down. People are uncomfortable. There's weird things happening in the house. It's not an ideal situation. And this fucker just leaves.
Yeah, in fact, the husband multiple times, as they're hearing the daughter talk to herself as Chauncey, they go, oh, isn't that, he goes, isn't that cute?
No. Like,
no.
It's not.
No, that's some split personality shit right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking, okay, maybe she, they're trying to say that she's mentally ill like her mom. So.
Yeah, but this is the best part now, because she is going to impale her hand on this board and is stopped. They call her therapist to come to the house.
She's seen this therapist before after
another exposition
got hurt by her mom. Yeah. So,
yeah. Now, this is where the movie thinks it's doing a really cool twist. But if you think out the movie, it doesn't fucking make out like a lick of sense. It doesn't check out at all. Right. No. Because this therapist comes and has a sit down with her in a room. And she says, can I? And well, first off, the main character tells the therapist, hey, I think the doll is a thing. Like, I'm worried about the doll. You know, like the Chauncey, her imaginary friend. I think it's weird. You know, and I think maybe I shouldn't have allowed her to have an imaginary friend. I don't know if it's working out for her. And the therapist is like, well, I'll talk to her. I'll figure this out. So they go into a room secretly, but the little girl says, can I bring Chauncey in here? And she goes, yeah, sure. I was like, wait a minute. Okay, the other one just said that. So she watches the little girl come out of the room. The stepmother watches upstairs. Watches her come over to Chauncey, who's sitting on a bench, grab Chauncey, bring, and then we watch her go all the way into the room with the therapist and sit the bear down. Then she sits at a chair closer to the therapist while Chauncey's on the seat and behind her. So the therapist asks her, hey, do you think, why did you want to hurt yourself? And she goes, Chauncey told me to do it as a part of a game. And she says, would a friend make a friend hurt themselves or make them feel scared or alone or any of that? And she's like, no. And she's like, well, do you want to talk to Chauncey? And why would he do that? And so the little girl turns around and now we get a conversation between Chauncey and the little girl in front of the therapist.
Yeah. And it's being recorded on camera.
It's being recorded on a camera. And what's really odd here in the shot is the camera is shooting the little girl from behind. And so every shot of the little girl does not seem like the same exact moment. It's just her like sitting still.
Mm-hmm.
But in the scene where we see the little girl talking, she's like emotional. I mean, overboard emotional, screaming. Like, I don't want to do this anymore, Chauncey. You're not making me feel good. And then when you see the behind shot, we hear Chauncey's voice version of her.
Maybe we shouldn't play together anymore, Chauncey. Maybe we shouldn't be friends. No.
And they're having full conversations in front of the therapist, who is completely floored, rightfully so. And because Chauncey is starting to say violent things to the therapist, I don't think I like you anymore. I think I want to hurt you or your three little nephews.
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
And on her computer screen is three boys they keep showing.
Oh, okay. I got it.
I was wondering, I was like, okay. And now you think the therapist is like, holy shit, we have slow personality problem. This is serious. No, she goes in the room. She goes outside and she talks to her and she's like, I've seen this before. You know, I've seen something like this very similar before. I think it's like, dissociative, you know, like some kind of like, yeah.
Dissociative
personality complex of some sort. And she's like, I've seen something like this before, because she's mentioning things I've heard before, like the never ever. You know, she mentions the never ever or something like that. And she's like, I've heard something like this before, and I've also seen a case like this. And then she goes and shows the stepmother footage from a previous case, which I think is kind of illegal.
Okay, first of all, it is okay. It is illegal, but there's always these freaking moments.
And she has it on the laptop that she brought, which is really funny. And in this video, it's of a little boy talking about his imaginary friend who made him cut off his thumb.
Yep, and he mentions the Never Ever.
Yeah, okay. And because I get to go to the Never Ever. And she says, right after this video, this kid went missing and we never found him again. Yep. And I was like, Jesus Christ, yep. Like, you're not a good therapist.
Okay, first of all, there's so much wrong with this. It's such a freaking cliche. Do you notice that this woman says to Jessica, hey, I know how to help Alice. I'm going to have you speak to a colleague of mine.
Thank you for bringing up her name, Alice, because we didn't talk about how on the nose that is. Falling down the rabbit hole. Yeah.
Well, so she says, I can't help Alice, but I know a colleague who can help Alice. And usually in these movies, when that happens, they'll go see the colleague, like Chris McNeil, you know, in The Exorcist, went to a million doctors. 88 fucking doctors. Anyway, love that line.
Yeah.
But she never, ever follows up with this. She never calls the colleague, or nothing gets followed up with.
Yeah.
At all. Mm-hmm. It's so bizarre. Like, how bad do you want to help this child?
Yeah.
It's so weird. So, like, that's one thing that just got thrown out the window. It's like, okay, I'm a therapist. I've seen this happen before, but I can't help this kid, so I'm leaving. Bye!
Yeah, but let's not talk about the most important reveal here, is that Chauncey isn't there at all. That the therapist tells her, what doll? And the main character's like, what?
Yeah, because she's like, Jessica's like, why'd you let her take the bear in the room?
Yeah.
And she's like, what bear?
Yeah.
Like, there's no bear. So she goes back to the video camera footage, and the bear is not there. But you see Alice talking, but it's her voice, but she's, like, not moving her lips. And the therapist says to Jessica, has she ever, you know, practiced any ventriloquism? Yeah. I'm like, she's fucking five,
because when she turned around, she wasn't moving her mouth.
Right.
And the therapist saw this and was like, holy shit.
Now,
but then she's like, you know, I've seen this before.
It would have been cool if the colleague was like, you know, some kind of priest, and it went into like some other movie, or they did
I'm glad they didn't mix more doctors into this.
They did some flipperoo or something, but it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, but that's not the important part of this, is that the reveal is that there is no doll, and then the other sister is even like, it's an imaginary friend.
Mm-hmm.
An imaginary friend isn't there.
Right.
There is no teddy bear. Now, I will say that everybody has looked at this thing and referenced it. And we know for a fact that the next door neighbor kid saw it make a face multiple times.
Unless, like I told you, she was holding air, and they make a point to tell you, to show you that she was holding air, and all the times that the doll was there but really not there. Maybe, you know, she said, my bear Chauncey is going to get you or something.
To the kid next door?
To the kid, and he just looked like, where's Chauncey?
And so that wouldn't make sense to him seeing the bear all over the house upstairs.
That's true.
That the sheet is in the shape of a bear. The pole cord is going to the bear. The light on the wall is the bear. When the sheet comes toward him, it jumps into a giant bear.
That's
why would that mean anything
so
to him?
So he did see it because it grew into a giant bear monster, yes. And it scared the shit out of him.
And I know, because in multiple other scenes, I know there's another interaction with the bear. I know it. And I'm like, every time it happened. So they're saying that, you know what this is? This is the therapist says, I know what's going on. You have past trauma, because she says, she mentioned the Never Ever, and she's like, yeah, she runs out of the session, goes down in the basement, grabs her 5-year-old things and flips her a book and it goes, I have a painting I drew when I was 5 years old of the Never Ever.
And she's like, do you remember that?
I know. She doesn't remember anything from that day.
I remember what I did 15 minutes ago.
She doesn't remember anything. And that one thing she remembers. And then she says to her, I think it's early on, she was looking for the book for a second and she saw the Never Ever picture. I think that's why she remembers. But then the therapist goes, this is funny. She saw a girl talking to herself violently with two voices, and one of the voices came with no mouth movement.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice also threatened her grandkids. Why would she even know about that? She's a little kid, right? And she says, I know what's going on. I've seen this a lot before. A parent and a kid, they share their traumas. And it's like, it's a connection type thing where she's experiencing what you experienced once. And I was like, how does that explain the throwing of the voice? How does that explain little girl violently coming after your grandkids?
Is it her grandkids or her nephews?
Who the fuck knows?
Whatever, whoever.
Yeah.
But bottom line is, no one gives a fuck. But bottom line is, like, if I saw a kid talking to herself like that, but not really talking, just it was the voices violent? Coming out and being violent, I would have literally called a freaking exorcist. Like, that's just paranormal shit right there. Yeah. Okay? I'm sorry.
Well, the therapist leaves, and what happens next, of course, is that the Chauncey has talked the little girl during this whole reveal of the bear is missing. Chauncey has talked her to going downstairs and going and following him into the never ever downstairs, where she paints on the wall and she, this is confusing too. She's supposed to burn all the items in a bowl. Like, she's supposed to get a bowl, a paintbrush, all these things, and put it all in the bowl.
All the things that she found during the scavenger hunt. Yeah. That's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah, she's supposed to light it on fire, but she has a fear of fire because of whatever happened to her once before.
Her arm was severely burned.
I can't do it, Chauncey. You have to. And they shot leaves that... And we also see... And the reason I was talking about the different shapes, multiple times throughout the movie at this point, we keep seeing three different kinds of monster ghosts.
Yeah,
we do. There's one with an alien-looking eye head, and there's another one that is a spider. Mm-hmm. There's another one I can't remember. It's another creature-looking guy who he comes out from behind her to grab the match.
Yeah, he's kind of like grayish-looking.
They're saying that the creature can burn things. That doesn't check out. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, she's afraid of matches because her whole arm was burned.
Yeah. But who knows? So she goes, disappears. She disappears. So after the therapist left, now the kid is gone. Alice! Kid is missing. So they call the cops for a second time in a week. Mm-hmm. The cops come. Now, do you think they would already have it on file? Then the mother break out of the psych ward. Should we check on the mother? Should we do anything?
Maybe the mother kidnapped the kid.
That's what I'm saying. None of this gets explained. And in fact, they never find the kid because stuff starts happening in the movie. Where do the cops go?
Yeah. We'll take the report and call you in the morning. Call you next week.
Yeah. What's really funny is that the older daughter and the stepmother fight because the stepmother starts telling her, I know where she is. She's in the never ever. When I was a little kid, I had an imaginary friend. It was the same imaginary friend. It's real. And it took her. And the older daughter goes, you're crazy as shit. And she I'm going to go look for my sister around town. So she leaves. But of course she runs into the neighbor, the old woman.
Oh, the old woman who knows everything.
Who says, come in my house. And the older daughter goes, okay.
I
goes
in a stranger's house. Yeah, come on in. I'll make some soup out of you.
Well, this is where we see the old woman's books. She has 100 books on imaginary friends, which happen to have the monsters we've been seeing in the books.
You guys, it is so freaking cliche.
She says that when she was babysitting her, she wanted to go to the never ever. And she said she wouldn't allow her and she didn't believe, but she could have gone with her and she could have seen the imaginary world and she had a chance. And she said that some imaginary friends are loving and fade away on their own and they go peacefully away as the kid gets older and forgets. And they keep mentioning Bing Bong from Pixar. They think that's funny.
They say it three times in the movie.
The older daughter says a lot. And she says, but some imaginary friends get mad when the kid gets taken away from them. They feed on the imagination of children. So when that imagination gets taken away, they're hungry and they're starved and they want revenge and they become evil imaginary friends.
And how does she know all this?
Who the fuck? She goes, I've been studying them forever. In the French language is cha-cha-chu, and in the and the Dutch, it's known as the gabagool. And she keeps saying
wahoo,
this.
Wahoo, wahoo.
Yeah, wahoo, wahoo at one point. Yeah. I was like, what the fuck is this?
Waka waka.
And then she goes, in America, they just call it imaginary friend. I was like, wow, we really suck.
Oh, I'm like, thanks. Yeah. Thanks. This lady seemed to know every goddamn thing.
Yeah, and now, I question this whole idea about how an imaginary friend craves a kid is imagination, but if the kid gets taken away too early, they get hungry and they get evil. Well, that's not what happens with our main character when she was a little kid at 5 years old.
No.
She was only taken away because the imaginary friend was trying to kill her.
Yes. Yep.
So the friend was already evil.
Yeah.
And it does not get explained of how to explain that at all. Well, they get all the information here and they go and tell the stepmother, no, we believe you. And we want to help you get to the imaginary place. So they come up with a plan to get to the never ever by going down to the basement and using the same door, but they have to make their own spell.
It's so stupid.
So the lead character says, we need something that hurts. Well, screw it. She grabs scissors and stabs herself in the hand, like no problem. And they put it in a bowl, all these things, and it doesn't light on fire and the spell doesn't work. So she talks shit about her stepdaughter. And it hurts her feelings so bad that the spell works. She says, sorry about that.
Yeah, it had to be something hurtful.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Not something that hurts, but necessarily, but something hurtful. Yeah,
that's like it's negative energy.
Negative energy. So the negative energy after she was like telling the daughter that she's a spoiled, rotten brat and she's, you know, terrible and all these things, that works.
Yes, and it opens a door, which they paint on a wall. And that makes the door open. And so they can go in. So all three of them go in. Now, this is really funny. We find out that the neighbor is secretly a bad person who wants to go to the Never Ever and is mad at the lead character because she didn't take her. We see that later on. We see a flash in this Never Ever. We actually see a flashback. They look through a painting on a wall. And they see the entire thing that happened in the opening of the movie. When she was a little girl, she was brought in. Her dad chased her into the Never Ever and got her out. When he was pulling her out, the creature grabbed the main character's arm and hurt her. So the father got the monster off of her. But in doing so, it stared into his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, if you look into the creature's eyes, the imaginary friend's eyes, it makes you see all of the children imagination at once until it makes you go crazy. And so they're suggesting that the reason the guy's crazy is he saw all of this imagination at one moment.
Okay, well then, okay.
Then how come he stayed for 30 years in this house? How was he paying for it?
Right, how did he stay for 30 years in the house after this?
Why wasn't he burning the house? Why wasn't he running around the block naked? Like, why wasn't he insane?
Right.
Why did it take that long for him to finally go insane?
It seems like it took him 30 years to go insane.
But he couldn't have because the grandma took him away after this moment.
The grandmother took Jessica away because of the injury to her arm that she sustained in the Never Ever, which they thought her father was hurting her.
This is where you could find out that the writers just had too many plot lines and couldn't figure out, and they just slapped them all together.
This was a disgusting, blobby mess.
Yeah. Because we're like, oh, you know what? We have to explain why he's crazy. Let's say this. And then they didn't think about it. And they were like, wait a minute, though. He had like 30 years.
Yeah.
Like, what did he do in the 30 years? Was he crazy the whole time? They have no answers for any of that. Just don't think about it, man.
I mean, the coolest set pieces were when the three of them, I guess, went into the Never Ever.
It looks terrible.
I mean, but it that's looks the like only
a Ripley's Believe It or Not museum.
It does, but you could tell they were trying to do like the whole Alice thing.
Yes,
but it was actually not so bad. It was kind of like dark and, you know, cryptic looking, but it wasn't.
You know that do-it-yourself thing with the Harry Potter clouds on the sky that everybody was doing? You put the cloud, the cotton balls on the sky with the light, and it looks like the clouds are lighting up. They literally did that in the hallway in these shots. Someone made fake cloud. In the ceiling.
It was the most appealing looking thing to see in the movie. So, yeah. I mean, that says nothing, but something.
The neighbor woman who is now of revealing that she's always wanted to be here and this was her life goal because I can now rule and I can use my imagination to make anything. I could be young. So now she's Dr. Chouinard from the second Hellraiser. I was like, wait a minute, she's Dr. Chouinard? Like, what is happening? I actually leaned over before this. I said to you, she's a villain, isn't she?
Of course she is, because she dedicated her life for 30 years for to imaginary trying to get friends. Back in there. Like, okay, I have a question, okay? This is very valid, and I wanted to pose it to you last night. If she was waiting all this time to get to the never ever, why didn't she babysit for another child who might have had an imaginary friend? Like, I feel like she didn't work too hard to get back there. She literally waited 30 years. Jessica may never have come back.
That's exactly right. She waited 30 years.
What if Jessica never came back to her family home? This woman would never get back to the never ever.
Yes. And she also reveals this crazy bunch of information that also doesn't make the Chauncey Bear thing make sense, because she says that she actually talked to Chauncey. And Chauncey asked her to bring them to her, to this place.
Okay, but here's the thing. Apparently no one can see him. Whatever. But this is what I'm saying. Like, she could have easily, like, became a nanny for, like, another kid and tried to get back to the never ever. She never did any of that. She started writing a series of books.
Yeah. And I would ask, when did this happen? Because Chauncey has been under the stairs forever. They also revealed that she tried to buy the house.
Yeah.
So the house was on the market?
When?
I know.
None of this makes any sense.
None of it. That's what I kept saying. Like, how long has this house been abandoned? What's been going on? Why was it for sale? Who put it for sale? Why is she moving into her old child home when it should have abusive memories, not happy memories?
Yes, but it wasn't an abusive thing. Her father did save her life.
But she doesn't remember that. She thinks that her father tried to hurt her. She's scared of her father. That's why she hasn't talked to him for 30 years.
Yeah.
So why would she want to go back and bring these stepdaughters, these new girls, to a house that is nothing but trauma to her?
That's
true. None of this makes sense. I want to know, when did the bear talk to this neighbor? When and how did they talk to each other, right? And also, she says she knows the name of the bear is Chauncey.
Yeah.
When this is a crazy thing here, is that she, all over the walls, she wrote C-B-S-E-E-B-E-E, all over the walls. Because when she was a kid, she couldn't say Chauncey. So she was saying C-B, Chauncey Bear.
Okay.
She was saying C-B.
Okay.
Right. And so, for some reason, the neighbor knows Chauncey's the name, although when she was babysitting, and by the way, she wasn't babysitting the day that the thing happened, so how does she know any of this?
Right. How does she know?
How does she also know that Chauncey Bear is CB?
Right.
No idea. And she also knows this bell. Mm-hmm. Oh, you need something mean. Oh, you need something like this.
Yeah.
How does she know all that? How does she know it? Did Chauncey give her, is there a scene cut from this movie where Chauncey gives her instructions?
Right. She wasn't present the day that all of this went down. So how does she know anything that happened?
Guess what, Joe? It's not important, because she's murdered instantly by a giant bear.
Yeah, she is.
off scene, she's ripped into her door by the giant bear hand. By the way, the giant bear in this movie looks like shit.
Yeah, it does.
It has these long hands. The person in the suit is wearing extra long hands, extended hands. It is so bad. It's so funny, because the one in the dolls looks better.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it does.
It does. Chauncey grew into a giant bear and ripped her into a room and killed her. And now is trying to separate the girls from each other as they look for the little girl. And, of course, they start witnessing crazy things. So, although, since anything can happen in an imagination world, do you think anybody's going to use their imaginations to do anything? Nope.
No.
They're not going to do anything with their imaginations. They're not going to do anything. No imagination thing happens whatsoever, except there's some crazy Alice in Wonderland stuff, like going into the rooms and having little moments. So one goes into the room and the light thing happens with the bear. The light goes around the room and then it comes to a bear poster and it turns into the giant monster bear, but it doesn't do anything to her, although it ripped the woman up in a second.
But now everybody can see the bear.
Yeah, so. Everybody can see Chauncey. And then she says, I can see Chauncey now. And this goes on for a bit, where everybody just keeps changing. People, the original biological mother's there is a creepy woman. There's a tea party, the whole damn thing. And the funniest part is the little girl says, I want to stay here. It's amazing here. I have everything I want. My mother's here. All my toys are here. You guys are now here. And they're like, yeah, but we got to leave. And she's like, you know what? It's fun to draw the door on the wall, because I feel like, oh, we could draw the door anywhere and get out of here. So they start smearing paint. And the little girl goes, yeah, remember all that stuff I just said about how I don't want to leave because I have everything here? Yeah, I don't feel like being here anymore either. I was like, what the fuck? How did they talk her? And she actually turns to Chauncey and she says, yeah, I've had enough. What? A second ago, you just said you had everything you wanted and you were happy.
Yeah.
It just comes out of nowhere. So she starts, they escape, or at least they think they escape because she's in a dream again. Mm-hmm. And everything, and it's like the cheesiest dream. And I knew it was a dream because it was so corny. But she's in there, and now all of the characters have the Chauncey Bear teddy bear eyes. It looks so fucking bad. It looks like something out of like an old Buffy Vampire Slayer episode.
Oh my god, it does.
It's so funny. It reminded me of something really, really bad. I just can't think of what it is, but they all have it, and they like chase her, and then the daughter comes in. And they set up earlier in the movie that she used to play some sport, and she had like a sporting equipment, and she brings that into the imagination world and to punch her evil doppelganger in the head and do one of those Chucky one-liners.
Yeah.
And she
what
helps.
What did she say?
I couldn't tell you. I can't remember now. She helps pull her out, but before they can get all the way out, they get all the way out, and Chauncey's there. And basically Chauncey says, we're going to be friends forever, virtually. And the little girl says, no, this is the never, ever.
No, she says, you will never, ever, ever be my friend, or something like that.
No, I thought mm-hmm. she says, this is the never, ever.
She's
or the ever, or something like that. This is the never, ever. And she throws the match on him. She now lights the match because she now got over her fears, and she sets Chauncey Bear on fire.
Never, ever.
Huh.
And it burns the house down so quickly that outside the house, when they all get outside. Now, by the way, remember the cops are still searching for this little girl?
Yep.
Nope. Now the emergency, the ambulance is there, and the fire truck is there in a second.
Like, there's no time to report this fire, and they're already on scene.
Yeah, and comically, the top of the house perfectly burns. Now, they were in the basement. The top of the house has a complete hole fall in it, a fire. It looks so funny. I was like, this movie is such a trip and such a waste.
I mean, okay, here's the thing. This is something that would happen, okay? But they never obviously address this because, you know, movie. So this stepmother, Jessica, so the cops have been there twice now, right? Twice. The father's not there. And
cops have been there three times now.
The cops have been there twice because first the mother came, then she lost the kid twice, and then the house burned down. Do you think that they would somehow maybe take these kids away?
Exactly.
I mean, call social services. Yeah. This woman is not capable of taking care of these children. I mean, they're in danger.
Yeah.
Literal danger with this woman.
Yeah, and also our main character falls from the ceiling at one point, breaks her leg, and also has a stabbed hand, and she's on crutches, and we just see her go to a hotel in crutches with the bandages. No police, nothing. She just is looking for a hotel.
Yeah, and the stupid-ass husband still hasn't showed up, right?
Yeah, because he's in another country.
I just have no words for any of this. But, of course, it ends with they're at a hotel in the lobby, and they see what looks like peeking over a chair is bear ears. Turns out that it was just a little boy who also had a teddy bear. But guess what?
It's actually Chauncey.
It's Chauncey. So he has latched on to another child.
Yep.
This movie has so much wrong with it that I just have no words. Yep. I don't even know how to even say this.
I can't believe that the police didn't arrest them on arson. The police didn't arrest them on the child endangerment. It's so crazy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why didn't they call social services, take these kids away?
Yeah, instantly, right.
Like, I mean, twice the cops were there, and then the fire department had to come because they burned down the fucking house. Like, I don't know, man. Something's not right.
Yeah.
Something's not right. But, I mean, you have to ask yourself the question, the very famous question, though, Scotty. Is this the worst movie ever made?
Absolutely not. No. It's not the worst movie ever made. Is it dull? Is it boring? Yes. Is it? Does it have a potential that it completely squanders? Yes. It's not the worst movie ever made, though.
No, it's not the worst movie ever made. So what will you give it score-wise?
I think I'm giving it a 4.
Okay, so I was thinking about giving it a 4 because it seems to be, I mean, it's a capable movie.
Yes.
The plot is just bad.
Yeah.
And poorly executed, and the actors, the casting was just not really on point here at all either. Even though I liked the character of Jessica, I thought she was sweet and pretty and I didn't mind her at all. I thought the character of Alice was a little too, you know, doing that overly cute kid thing with the little voice.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we shouldn't play together anymore, Chauncey. Maybe we shouldn't be friends.
It was getting obnoxious after a while, and then the cliche teenager was just an asshole, and I wanted to kick her in the face. So it was like, there was nobody that I really liked or cared for in this. I even thought the therapist was a stupid asshole. So it's like,
truth.
But, I guess I'll give it a 4. But that brings us to our segment of why we can't have nice things, where I show you two extremes of online movie reviews and how the internet destroys the movie rating system. So I'm going to give you one 1-star review and one 10-star review, and this should be freaking fun. Let's start with the 1-star review today.
I can't believe you can find a 10.
Oh, there's several. Several. Okay, so 1 out of 10, wow. There are not enough words to describe how god-awful the storyline, acting, and wannabe jump scares are. I feel sorry for the other people in the theater with me. I think we all said, what the hell is this piece of shit at the same time? I almost reimbursed ticket costs to people as a token for my sorrow of the loss of time we all endured. I can't imagine these actors accepted this as a good choice in their careers. I would be ashamed to attach my name, honestly. I honestly would have used an alias. Hollywood has run out of ideas, good script writers, actors, all of it. If you are in need of a good nap, go snore through this one. That's a 1 out of 10. Okay.
Wow.
Wow, that's what he said.
Yeah, I mean, it's very harsh. You couldn't find anything interesting about it, but I mean, I get it. I can't fight with these people. I understand what they're getting at. I just think they go a little too low. There had to be something in there that was at least decent.
Yeah, you know? At least one or two things that were like,
okay. Would you have liked it if Chauncey was like going ravenous? Like his eyes went like red and he got fangs or whatever. Or like he had a mouth and he was talking. He had a cool voice.
I was waiting for it. I wanted it to happen.
Would that have made it better is what I'm asking. Yes, I think so too.
Because then it would have turned into like schlock and I love schlock.
I think that would have been a more fun movie. I think that's what people kind of want.
Yeah.
Very disappointed that Chauncey's not real.
Yeah. Well, this review is so ridiculous, outrageous, and I just don't. Okay, so this review is a 10 out of 10, better than expected. Imaginary turns out to be better than expected. From the movie trailer, you might think is in the vein of Annabelle or other possessed toy movies out there. It turns out to be something different and more original. Taking a very familiar route at first, Imaginary moves away from being predictable with various twists and turns, till it guides the audiences to a solid third act that might remind audiences of Hellbound Hellraiser 2 in many various ways. DeWanda Wise and the cast deliver solid performances. Also, Veronica Falcone, Dr. Soto, has a good performance. Sadly, the freaking therapist, he's saying, what? Has a good performance. Sadly, the rest of the characters aren't important or were underdeveloped, making them uninteresting or in some cases repetitive, ridiculous, or over the top. The visual effects and the creature designs are great. Another thing I like is set designs. This film has various, and you can appreciate the effort. Overall, Imaginary delivers an entertainment, giving us something familiar, but also different and original. And yes, it has its flaws, but it deserves a watch. Okay, if this movie has its flaws,
why
are you giving it a 10?
Yeah, and can I also point out this thing that really bothers me about this Annabelle? Annabelle isn't a doll that moves.
Yeah, people.
It's exactly like Chauncey in this movie.
Yeah.
Chauncey does move, actually, so it is kind of a possessed doll.
Annabelle is a
conduit.
Yes, but she is a physical being. She's not imaginary. She is a doll. She's a real doll.
You mean there was once an Annabelle? Annabelle itself never moves. The monster moves it. It's the demon who's attached to it.
Yes. Yes, of course. But it's a physical thing that you could touch. Apparently, Chauncey in this movie
That's true.
Is but not.
He pointed out, like, oh, it's not like you're possessed dolls that move. And he said, like, Annabelle. And I'm like, again, with this Annabelle thing, no, it's exactly like Annabelle in that sense, where it's a conduit. But you're right. Chauncey is not really there, which is mind-blowingly weird to me.
You can't poke him.
And again, at the end, doesn't make any sense. But the little boy has Chauncey.
Mm-hmm.
And the shot, we see a different bear.
It's a completely different bear.
And then it turns into Chauncey.
Yep.
So my thought is that the bear is actually there, but it's Chauncey. So the mother can see the bear toy that he has. And they also all saw the bear looking over the thing.
Yeah.
So the bear is physically there again. This movie cannot figure out if Chauncey's there or not.
Right. It cannot figure out what the hell it's doing. It just can't. So I'm...
Yeah. I mean, again, it's like, giving it a 10, I mean, come on. You know it's not... I can't stand that. People use IMDb like it's going to be one or the other. It's like perfect or it's not. I can't stand that shit. Well, if it's not the worst movie ever made, is it going on our list? I think it's going on the list regardless because all the movies we do on Talking Trash now are going on our list.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask you this one question. Is this better than Madame Web?
Are you going to be mad at me if I say no?
No, I want to know, honestly.
I don't think it's better than Madame Web.
You would watch Madame Web.
I would watch Madame Web again.
So, Artemis Fowl?
I fucking hated it. Oh my God. I don't want to say that this is better than Artemis Fowl, but I think it is.
There's a part of me that thinks Artemis Fowl is better.
Oh,
but okay, God. If you say you think Artemis Fowl is worse... I'm going to put this movie at number 17.
Okay.
Well, maybe...
I don't know. Maybe it's not better. Maybe it's not worse than Artemis Fowl. Artemis Fowl had some cute things going on in it.
I thought so, too.
All right. It's not worse than Artemis Fowl.
Well, then I'm going down the list. And I'll just jump all the way up and say, Son of Mask, better or worse?
Okay, wait a minute, though. Artemis Fowl, what did we give that score-wise?
I can't even tell you right now. I just know we have it at number 16, right between April Fool's Day 2008 and Hard Rock Zombies.
Well, here's the thing. I gave Artemis Fowl a 3. So I cannot rightfully say that this movie is, that Artemis Fowl is better than this movie. I can't rightfully say that because I'm giving this one a 4, which I'm thinking about, you know, throwing mine down to a 3.
I'm going to put this at 18.
All right, put it at 18. I'm confused on... whether or not I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I gave Artemis Fowl that low, but yeah, I'm giving this a 4. And I get why people don't like it. And I get also why some people, especially younger people, might enjoy it. But I would say that this is not a good film. And this is exactly what's wrong with these cut and paste horror movies. They're just very lazy, very rushed out, and not really thought out. Just established over an idea. So, yeah, I mean, I think we've done enough ranting and raving about the problems with these kind of movies, and this movie in particular.
And we hear you. We hear you guys that are, you know, on Instagram. We respect a lot of these reviews that you guys are putting on for this movie. And there are a lot of ones. And I said, wow, to one of our buddies on there, I said, wow, this has to be the worst movie that you've ever seen, because I just can't imagine. I mean, it's a 1. Like, wow, that's trash. But I understand now, because after seeing it, I'm like, oh, dang, this is not good. But, I mean, I wouldn't go as low as a 1, but that's never. Just me.
Yeah. All right, though. So, yeah, we're going to get out of here. So I would say hit us up on social media. If you see it and you think, you know, maybe I like it more or less, tell us. We're at, I'm at Just Another Movie Night on Instagram, and Joe is at The Crafty Misfit on Instagram. She's making some fun things. Go check it out. And I don't think she has any Chauncey Bears, and I don't think she ever will. So sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Or if she does, we can't see them. Who knows?
I mean, I talk to my imaginary friends all day.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good one. Bye.